Murder and Moonshine, a true crime podcast with a southern twist. Hey y'all, welcome back to Murder and Moonshine. This is Christy.
And this is Misty. And today it is Christy's story.
It is. I'm excited. It is a long, detailed story.
You did a deep dive.
We do. We got a bunch of shit to cover.
I like it. That's the great way to bring in the new year, because we are actually recording on New Year's Eve.
We are.
And December has been a bitch.
A slutty bitch.
A slutty, dirty bitch.
Yes. It's been so rough.
We've just fumbled our way through the end of the year, but here we are on the very last day.
We're coming off sickness. We had both down with the sickness. I sound like a hooker.
With a two-pack-a-day Marlboro habit.
And there's going to be some sniffling and some coughing, so y'all bear with us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the best way to ward off the old bronchitis.
Well, that's what the old timers say, is throw a little moonshine on it.
And I haven't had any.
I haven't either.
Because it's been weeks since we recorded.
Yes.
And I really have not had any.
So, and then we're just going to jump right into not having any to doing 135 proof.
Yes. My sister, Rhonda.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Decided to bring us back some moonshine from Tennessee when they were in Sevierville over Thanksgiving.
Right.
I was like, oh, yeah, I love some moon. And then she said, it's 135 proof. I said, fuck, are you trying to kill us? We've never had.
And then you're like, we'll try it.
I mean, yeah, we're definitely going to try it.
Because we're troopers.
Yeah.
We don't have fast stuff.
No.
So we've got the Tennessee Shine Company straight off the steel corn whiskey, 135 proof.
There's no flavor. No, it's just straight off the steel, right down your throat. Just smack you.
Yes. I'm interested to see how this is going to go.
Well, we already know.
I figure we should check it for poison.
It's going to be hot. Whatever you're sipping on, fill your cups up. It's that time. Cheers, bitches.
Mm. Mm. Oh my God.
Mm. I'm gonna have to take that in small doses.
I mean, I'm still trying to process what's happening.
I think it just opened my sinuses in my mouth right up.
I didn't even know I had them till just now. And I know you have salivary glands, but I almost feel like my tongue is like secreting its own saliva.
It's rejecting what you just put in your mouth. It's trying to wash it away immediately.
Oh my gosh.
And my throat is on fire. I can feel that in my chest.
Mm-hmm.
Going,
you know where it's at
down
in your body. At the time it's in your body.
I feel it every step of the way.
Mm, and so we're going to do 135 proof.
With this long story.
Because we're smart planners.
Yeah, that's how we do shit around here.
But before we get started on this long story, we would like to thank our listener family.
Yes, thank you guys so freaking much. Because like we said, December was a bitch.
It was
a hard month for a lot of reasons.
Oh,
lot of reasons. But when those stats came in, now it's yearly stats, but we started in March.
Right.
So it hadn't been quite a whole year yet.
Yeah.
But I was so freaking excited.
Because we have no idea what we're doing.
No.
We're just fumbling our way along.
Right.
Feeling
we're
it
just
out.
Two country chicks.
We're happy anybody's listening.
That's just drinking moonshine and talking about our favorite subject, gruesome deaths and murders.
Yeah. And there's no pretty way to put that, you know?
It is what it is.
When you say the words, there's no pretty word for that. But, yeah.
But we are in the top 25%. That's fucking amazing.
So much.
That's all because of our listeners. And we are in 40 countries now. 40.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they love our accent or just feel sorry for us.
Yeah.
But either way.
We'll take it. Either way.
Thank you, guys.
We'll take pity downloads, too.
Hey, like Cardi says, it doesn't do anything but help me in the end. So. Love us or hate us, just keep downloading.
Exactly. But before we get started on this story, I just feel like we need to discuss Neil the Seal.
Neil
and how
the
much
Seal
I love him so much.
He's my favorite. He is 100% my spirit animal.
I didn't know I could love an elephant seal as much as I do.
Right? When that bitch had to call into work and say she couldn't make it because Neil literally wouldn't move away from her vehicle. I mean, how do you tell an 800-pound seal to move?
And he's not even full grown.
If he wants to move, he will. If he don't,
and look, the people that walk up on him and he just raises up, starts yelling at him.
I fucking love him. I love how he just lays out in the middle of the road. They put cones around him. He'll eat them damn things. He hates a cone.
I've seen him attack a sign. And I love when he's like hopping out there and you see all his blubber and his just fat rolls. And shake and roll.
And they try to get him to go back in the water. And he's like, fuck you. If I wanted to be in the water, I'd get in the water. Right now, I want to be laid up here on this driveway.
He said, I'm sunning and this is the perfect spot.
He'll be getting on people's porches.
Yes. I wish I had a Neil in my neighborhood. Tasmania.
That's right. So it's right off Australia.
Yes.
It's part of Australia. And I love when they're talking to Neil. They're like, mate, somebody lives here, mate. Get out of the way, mate.
And he's just hollering at him.
Yes. We love you, Neil.
I think in Elephant Seal, he's saying, fuck you.
Yes. I'll do what I want to do. That's my life. That's the life just, I want to live.
Neil makes me happy. He makes me smile.
Yeah.
And that's a great way to have on the, I mean, that's a great thing to have on the last day of the year.
It is.
Neil the Seal in your life. If you haven't seen him, please look him up.
Look him up.
He's amazing.
Oh, it's worth it.
Love him.
Causing chaos all day. And no fucks given.
None.
You know, I feel like I should probably go ahead and apologize right now for that Australian accent. Listen, I'm Southern. All I can do is Southern.
I love to hear you do different accents.
Because they all sound like a Southern
just
accent.
Just a version of a weird Southern accent.
Okay.
You know what? If we ever tell ghost stories again.
We will. Like
for in October.
Mm-hmm.
If we do that again, you should tell the story in an Australian accent.
We would probably lose a lot of our Australian listeners if I did that. I don't want to risk it.
Because we love Australia.
I fucking love Australia. How could you not? No, I will not put you guys through that.
Mate, I promise. If y'all want to hear it, you should let us know because I do.
Oh, my 135 is kicking in.
I know, and that's just one.
And we're about to take one more because I'm about to get started on the story. I'm super fucking excited.
All right, bitch. Tell us what we talk about
today
then.
I have picked some local fuckery for us.
Local fuckery.
Yeah, girl, takes place all over North Carolina. Well, not all over North Carolina, but Reidsville, Greensboro, Winston-Salem, Kernersville.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically the whole triad. Well, maybe not High Point, but a lot of the triad. Anyway.
Right, up in that area.
The Piedmont triad. But I don't know. Was it even called the triad in the 80s?
I have no idea.
Listen.
You know, I was a little nug then.
Right.
You know?
Call me what you want. I don't know. I know it's the triad now. That's
I was watching
important.
Bon Jovi on MTV and Madonna.
Like a virgin, bitch. I don't know nothing about the triad.
That True Blue album.
And don't forget our favorite MC Hammer. Bitch, we all had some Hammer pants in the 80s.
Or what our mama told us was Hammer pants.
What our grandmamas made us and sewed together.
Just get it big and cinch the waist.
Right. It definitely wasn't no silk
You could
pants.
Be a genie. Who knows?
We were looking good. Okay. This story takes place in the triad. It's really nationally known as the Bitter Blood Murders.
Oh, okay.
We're going to be talking about Frederick Clinner Jr., which is Fritz.
Okay.
And Susie Newsom.
I can't believe none of this is sounding familiar so far. So
you're going to love the fuck out of this story.
Okay.
And I know it's called the Bitter Blood Murders, but I have named it the Cousin Lovers.
Oh. I mean, I like it. It's direct. It's to the point.
You know, the cousin lovers.
If you're scrolling, you're going to stop and be like, okay, what is this about?
If you see bitter blood, you're like, well, that's every day. If you see the cousin lovers, you're like, hold up.
What the actual fuck is happening
And that's
here?
What you're going to be saying during this story. Okay. What the fuck?
That's a great way to end 2023.
I thought so, too. I'm bringing out the hardcore shit here. There's a book about this story.
Mm-hmm.
That's very detailed. It's a great book.
I love books.
Jerry Bledsoe. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't read it. Judge.
But y'all can.
I mean, judge me if you want to. I'm not much of a book reader.
Right. Some people aren't. Yeah.
A lot of shit online. I do all my research and shit myself. But if there's a movie, I'm going to watch the movie. I'm not necessarily going to read the book.
I get it. Okay. Yeah. Not everybody's a book reader.
There's movies about this called, or one movie about this called The Best of Families. And then there's multiple TV shows covering the story. Before we get started, let's do trigger warnings. There is incest, which you probably guessed by the name of this.
Yes, cousin lovers gave that away.
There's multiple murders, including children, and there's death by suicide.
Okay.
So there's a lot that's going
to
happen.
So if you guys aren't down on that, we completely understand. We hope that you will tune in to the next episode then. Not part two, but the next episode. If any of that is offensive to you. So
for those of you who can't wait to hear more,
let's take a shot and buckle the fuck up.
That's right. That's right.
All right, Philip, whatever it is that you're drinking.
Cheers, bitches.
Oh, shit. Oh, God. I think I just had a free neck adjustment right there. I felt my neck crack.
Whew, I feel it in my chest again. I feel it in my chest. Okay, this story involves three very prominent families.
Okay.
And lots of members within those families. Like, so much so that I had to keep the genealogical chart pulled up so that I could keep referencing back to it to make sure I was completely understanding how everybody was tied to everybody.
So we're going
to
dive into a lot of people on 135 proof.
Yes.
All right.
It starts in Reidsville, North Carolina. And that's straight north of Greensboro. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of getting close to the North Carolina-Virginia state line.
Right.
We're going to start talking about Robert Bob Newsom. Mm-hmm. Robert was born February 4th, 1920 in Winston-Salem. He was born into a very prominent father. Bitch.
He was born into a father.
He was born into a very prominent family.
Yes.
This is going to be difficult.
Oh, it's going to be so hard.
And his father was the top executive at R.J. Reynolds, which all of us local know that R.J. Reynolds and Winston-Salem.
Big tobacco company.
Back in, you know, you're talking about the 40s and 50s was a booming fucking business.
Right.
Booming. And he was a top executive. So, you know, they were wealthy. They lived a more privileged lifestyle.
Oh, if he's a tobacco executive, yeah.
Yeah. The next person we're going to talk about is Florence Abigail Sharp. She was born April 14th, 1919, and her father was James Sharp. Now, James Sharp was revered all over in North Central and Northwest North Carolina because he established the Sharp Institute, which was a co-educational day and boarding school. And he started it in the 1900s.
Oh, okay.
So he felt a need for better education.
Okay, yeah.
So he starts the school. Enrollment had climbed to over 200 students, but by 1906, the school unfortunately burned down.
Oh.
And this ended his career as Professor Sharp. But before the school had even burned down, James had already been studying law. So he passed the Supreme Court's bar exam in 1908.
Okay.
So he didn't really skip a beat. The school burnt down. He finished school by 1908. He's a lawyer.
Gotcha.
In 1914, he moved his practice to Reidsville, North Carolina. And this is where he remained for 38 years.
Okay.
He continuously practiced law. He served his community. He raised his family. During his years in Reidsville, he built big reputation. He was a tenacious trial lawyer. His law partner described him as never had a guilty client.
Wow. That's the kind of lawyer you want.
Right? Whether you're guilty or not. He was constantly active in the political and social life, you know, of his community. He served in North Carolina State Senate from 1925 to 1927. He was a county attorney for the county of Rockingham, which is where Reidsville is.
Mm-hmm.
It's Rockingham County. It gets confused because we have a Rockingham city, too.
Yes.
It's not far from there, but this is Rockingham County. He served a number of successive terms as president of Reidsville Chamber of Commerce and the Rockingham County Farm Bureau. That word's always hard for me to say.
Bureau.
Bureau, yeah. For some reason. James married Annie, who was a teacher at the Sharp Institute.
Okay.
And together they had 10 children.
Oh, God.
Right? Well, I mean, this was in 19.
Back in the day. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Their first child, Susie, was born in 1907.
Okay.
Susie later became the very first woman state Supreme Court justice, chief justice in the United States.
Oh, wow.
She was the very first, let me say that again, woman state Supreme Court chief justice.
That's a whole mouthful.
After two shots, 135. That was a lot.
That's, you did great.
In the whole United States.
Hey, go Susie.
And she was the first woman superior court judge in North Carolina.
Wow.
Years later, just little FYI, she was selected by Time Magazine in January of 1976 as one of 12 women of the year.
Hey.
So she was featured in Time Magazine.
Go ahead, Susie.
So you can see that these families, one being an executive, R.J. Reynolds.
Yeah.
And this other family being known lawyers. In Reidsville for lawyers and judges and,
yeah,
you know, everything that's popular. That's how the last names Sharp and Newsom were so widely known.
Gotcha.
So those two of the three families we're talking about today, okay, Sharp and Newsom. So Bob Newsom and Florence Sharp, which is who I just described, their families, they get married.
Okay.
So you have these two prominent families that get joined
get
by
together,
this marriage.
Right.
They get married and have a daughter named Susie Sharp. And she was born December 24th, 1946.
Christmas Eve baby.
Christmas Eve baby. She was named after her Aunt Susie, who I just described. The
okay.
Supreme Court Justice.
Right.
You know, that was her mom's sister. So
okay.
She named her daughter after her to honor her. The Newsom Sharp family is half of this story. The other family is the Clinners.
The Clinners.
The Clinners.
That's weird in my mouth, but maybe it's the 135.
So one of Florence's sisters, mm-hmm. not Susie, who was the Supreme Court Chief Justice, one of her other sisters, there was 10 siblings. I know there's a lot of people, so I'm trying to keep it.
10's a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
One of her other sisters was named Annie Sharp. Annie married Frederick Robert Clinner Sr. in 1937.
Okay.
Frederick was a 1936 graduate of the Duke University, and he'd studied medicine, so he was a doctor.
Okay.
After 3 years of postgraduate medical training at North Carolina Tuberculosis Sanitarium in Winston-Salem, I don't know if that still exists. I think that was, Dr. Clinner moved and established his medical practice in Reidsville, North Carolina.
Okay.
And one of the reasons being is that was where his wife's family was
from.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the hometown of his wife, Annie. Although he specialized in the diseases of the chest, he also saw general practice patients as well.
Right.
Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Clinner.
Mm.
He had a reputation himself.
I don't know. That name feels weird in my mouth. And like I said, I don't know. It could be the 135, but I feel like he's a villain here.
Well, not
based off my taste buds right now.
Not necessarily him.
Okay.
Okay, so beginning in 1940,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Clinner began experimenting with mega doses of vitamins, mostly vitamin C. And he would use these to treat a variety of medical disorders. From infants to the elderly, it didn't matter.
Okay.
Clinner used large doses of vitamins to treat a wide range of medical disorders, including polio, multiple sclerosis. His research in his treatment inspired others as well. He inspired the Nobel Prize winner, Linus Pauling.
Mm.
I mean, like, if you catch the attention, just a doctor here in North Carolina,
right,
catches the attention of a Nobel Prize winner,
right,
for his treatment.
Right.
I mean, there's something to that.
Yeah.
There's a reason. So Linus put out this 1988 clinical guide, and he is quoted as saying, "The early papers by Dr. Fred R. Clinner provide much information about the use of large doses of vitamin C in preventing and treating many diseases. These papers are still very important."
Okay.
So, I mean, he even wrote about him.
Okay.
So while practicing medicine, he published 27 papers about the benefits of vitamin C therapy for over 30 diseases, he listed. Then on May 23rd, 1946, Dr. Klinner was made national headlines when he delivered the world's first set of surviving identical black quadruplets. And these children were called the Fultz sisters. It was four girls.
Wow.
The Fultz sisters. He delivered them at the Annie Penn Hospital in Reedsboro. In his opinion, Klinner attributed their survival to the massive doses of the vitamin C that he had been administering her while she was pregnant with the babies. Dr. Klinner was revered by many people who believed in his medical treatments, but he was also surrounded by controversy over his seemingly eccentric treatment and views. He was shunned by a lot of people in the local medical community because they just saw his ways as unconventional.
Right.
That's not
right. They thought how it was they weird, were taught. Kind of kooky.
Right. That's not how they were taught and trained to treat people. Dr. Klinner even gave up his medical privileges to admit and treat patients at the Annie Penn Hospital. And this was because of their difference in opinions. So he couldn't even see patients in the hospital. He couldn't check on you if you were sick and his patient. He couldn't deliver babies, anything, just because of their differencing of opinions.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Klinner says he claimed that he treated over 10,000 people with massive. Why can't I fucking say that?
It's 135.
Massive doses of vitamin C over a 30-year span without any ill effects. Now, that's his claim to fame.
Right.
Strictly his. And after he couldn't see patients at the hospital anymore, he would only see them at his office. So right. Whatever you needed, you'd have to come to him.
Yeah.
Despite his belief in treating many medical ailments with vitamins, Dr. Klinner could not avoid illness himself and died from heart disease. But that was not until May 20th, 1984. Mm-hmm. And he's going to come up a little bit again later.
Doses of vitamin C didn't cure his heart disease.
Did not help him.
No.
At all. He had suffered a heart attack at his home. And listen, they wanted to take him to the Annie Penn Hospital, which was 1 mile from his home.
Right.
But he was still so indifferent with them since he quit. He refused to go. And he made them take him to Eden, North Carolina, to Moorhead Memorial Hospital, which was 12 miles away. And he died on the trip.
Wow.
I'm not saying that he wouldn't have, even if he'd went to the closest hospital. Who knows?
But, you know.
But we'll never know now.
No, we won't.
Okay, so that's kind of summing up the history on Dr. Klinner.
Okay.
But before all of that, obviously, before he passed away, before all this happened, he and his wife Annie had a son, Frederick, Robert Klinner Jr., who they called Fritz.
Okay.
So Fritz was born July 11th, 1952. Bob and Florence Newsom had Susie in 1946. Frederick and Annie and Florence are sisters.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know how much closer DNA you can get than sisters. Right. I may be identical twins, but right. Sisters nonetheless. Right. So their DNA is very similar.
Right.
They have Susie in 1952. I mean, sorry, in 1946, and then Fritz is born in 1952. So Susie and Fritz were first cousins by blood.
Okay.
As close as you can be.
Okay.
And 6 years apart. Susie was 6 years older.
Right.
They grew up in a very prestigious environment.
Yeah, I mean, if you got old tobacco money, doctors,
from grandpa,
lawyers.
And then, right, your dad's a lawyer, your aunt's a judge.
You got
all
old
this
money.
Stuff. Right. And then Fritz's family, Dr. Klinner, has, you know, made that name for themselves. They grew up very prestigious in a very close-knit family. Mm-hmm. Susie had dozens of cousins because, remember, her mom had 10 siblings. Or, excuse me, 9. There was 10 in all.
Right.
So she had 9 siblings. So there was a lot of little kids.
A lot.
But from the very beginning, Susie and Fritz, they were just very close.
Even as kids?
Even as kids.
Okay.
Susie was raised in Winston-Salem, like I said, wealthy, privileged lifestyle. And she was spoiled rotten from the beginning because she was born with a heart murmur. And the doctor told her parents specifically not to let her cry or get upset so that her heart would not, you know, get out of rhythm so there wouldn't be any complications. So Susie never cried.
Oh.
They didn't, anything she wanted, she was given to appease her heart.
Right, right. Boy, that puts you in a bad spot.
Yeah. And she, as she got older, she like regularly threw temper tantrums, like epic.
I was just about to say, you're growing, like you're just putting Miracle Grow on a little cunt.
She would be crying and throwing a temper tantrum so bad that her mother would have to throw cold water on her to get her to breathe and snap out of it. I'm going to say that's worse on the heart.
Right.
Than just telling somebody no.
Yeah. And putting them in timeout.
Yeah.
You know?
Just my opinion. So growing up, she always continued to get everything she wanted. She was smart. She was beautiful. She was popular. She went on to attend Wake Forest College.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have much of a dating history because her parents were kind of strict about dating.
Right.
So now that she's at college, she's out and about, and she meets and starts dating Tom Lynch.
Okay.
Tom was from a well-off family as well, but Tom's family is from Kentucky.
Okay.
So he's going to school out of state.
Right.
But Susie knew that Tom's well-off family could allow her to continue to live the lifestyle she wanted to.
Right.
That she was accustomed to.
I mean,
to.
I feel like she should plan for that because... Yeah.
She, and he was studying at Wake Forest to be a doctor.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, that's what she wanted to
she
marry,
was a doctor.
She would
be hell on wheels to anybody that couldn't provide her that lifestyle.
And Susie was described as having a very definite type A personality who was loud and demanding, whereas Tom was very quiet and shy, which made Susie even happier. She's like, I'll be able to tell this motherfucker to do anything I want to do, and he'll fucking do it. So, of course, that's exactly what... She knew he'd be easy to control.
Right.
How sad is that?
I mean, that's what... That's
it's
what,
almost like he was a target.
That's what predators are like. Right? That's what it made me think of, is she's a predator.
It's disgusting. Well, of course, they're dating. I mean, she's beautiful and popular and well-known in the community. He's the one that's out of state.
Right. So he's like, I got a catch.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So he takes her home to meet his family. Things didn't go well. Right from
they
the get-go.
They sensed the crazy as soon as she came in the door.
There was immediate tension between Susie and Tom's mother, Dolores.
Oh.
Dolores was also a type A controller. And she loved controlling her son.
Right.
And now this other girl had come in.
This Jezebel.
And Dolores immediately fucking recognized this bitch gonna try to control him. Well, I'm as crude as this sounds, mama's come second to the puss. The puss
at a certain age,
one.
Absolutely, yes. At a certain age, you take a backseat.
Right. And I'm a mother of a son.
Yes.
I'm well aware.
Yes.
As long as I get grandbaby rights as much as I want, I'll step back. You control him for a little while. I had to deal with that motherfucker for years anyway.
Right.
Let him be your problem.
You're
for
like,
a
is
minute.
He paying his bills? Yes. Okay. That's
we check in every day. He's good. I'm good. We're good. You know. Anyway. So mom still wanted to control him, and she knew right off the bat, no.
Yeah.
Susie is not going to allow that.
She said, I see this little tramp.
She knew what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you think Tom cared about that?
No, not at all. Absolutely not.
Dolores even told Tom that she thought Susie was rude and pretentious, and she urged Tom, don't stay with her.
And I feel like Susie probably was rude and pretentious.
100%. Yeah. She was a spoiled, rotten,
exactly.
rich brat, privileged brat.
She doesn't know any other way to be.
Right. But do you think Tom listened to mom?
No.
No. Because mom takes a backseat to the puss.
Exactly.
So June 6, 1970, Tom and Susie got married. Didn't take long to get a hold of that.
It being naughty and not approved just made it a little better.
And they got married at the Greensboro Country Club. I just love how close this story is.
Greensboro
I think it's cool.
Country
at the
Club.
Greensboro Country Club. Dolores did not approve. Her so much so that her and Susie had a huge fight that day, the day of the wedding, over Tom's sister Janie over her dress. Susie insisted Janie wear this dress. Janie hated the dress. Dolores hated the dress.
I just feel like it's probably an awful dress, and she's doing it just for shits and giggles. Like,
she first of all, she did ugly ass dress. She did it 100% on purpose. 100% on purpose. Second of all, how fucking snooty do you have to be to have a knockdown drag out over a fucking dress? Right. Over
but
a
you know
dress.
People get to be bridezillas and stuff when it comes to wedding stuff, and they can get fucking
sure
nuts
she was
about
the
it.
Worst. You know she was the worst. But they went ahead and had the wedding. I mean, whatever. Fight, do what you want. We're getting married.
Mm-hmm.
After the wedding, though, Tom really quickly abandoned the idea of becoming a doctor. He said medical school is hard.
I can't spell all them words.
Medical school is hard as fuck. So listen to this. You know what he decided he wanted to do?
Oh, do tell.
He said it would be easier. And this makes me laugh. He said he'll be a dentist. And listen, the reason I'm laughing is because if you know me at all, my background, I have like 25 years in dentistry. So when he said medical school is just way, it's just hard as fuck.
So like, I work on some teeth.
But now teeth, no, fuck it, I can do that.
You just floss and scrub. That's it. That's all.
So it just makes me laugh. It just makes me laugh. But, I mean, he couldn't afford to go to dental school. He was still in fucking medical school.
Oh, that was just an idea.
That was an idea.
Okay.
But, no. Now, after the wedding, Tom's father offered to pay his tuition for dental.
What a tuition. I bet that is expensive.
Listen.
Expensive,
I know
saw, girl. Expensive.
Listen. I know you saw it. Look, you guys at home don't see it. But Misty said, I knew I said it wrong, but I wasn't 100% sure it was as bad as I thought it was. So I look over at her. I'm like, and when I see the look on her face, I'm like, yep, it was that bad. It was indeed that bad. So
it was so wonderful. Oh, my God. Look how much joy you just brought me right now.
Okay. My eyes are watering, so I got to find my plate. Let me straighten my papers. That
it always makes it better.
It always makes your vision better. Okay. Tom's father said that he would pay his tuition for dental school, but only if they moved to Kentucky and he could go to the University of Kentucky.
Right.
So he wasn't going to pay out-of-state tuition anymore. If he was going to pay for him to be in school, it was going to be in-state.
Right, right.
So as newlyweds, Tom and Susie moved to Lexington, Kentucky. And they stay there while Tom is attending dental school the whole mm-hmm. time. However, Susie don't want a damn thing to do with Tom's family. Like, nothing.
Right. I mean, I've seen that going in.
So I'm assuming it says 2 years. So I'm assuming like whatever he put in at Wake Forest mm-hmm. applied towards his dental school credits.
Sure.
I'm guessing he just went for
his credits transferred.
And shit was a lot different back in the 70s.
Right.
As well. So it says 2 years. So while they're living in Lexington, Kentucky, very close to his family for 2 years, they had one get together. One.
Sometimes that's all you need, you know?
One. Once. And as soon as Tom finished dental school, they moved to South Carolina. I mean, as soon as he finished, like, she had that shit planned.
Throw your cap and gown in the trunk. We out.
Now, this is kind of sad.
Right.
Their first child was born in 1974, a boy. They named him John. Dolores was so excited to have her first grandchild, especially mm-hmm. a grandson. Couldn't wait to meet him. Could not wait to meet him. When Dolores gets to South Carolina, she flies in. Susie won't let her in the door.
Oh.
Susie won't let her in the door, and Susie passes her a note under the door
mm-mm.
that says, go check in at a hotel, and then call me to make a reservation/appointment to see the baby.
I don't know if it's me or the 135, but I want to snatch her by the back of her head. Like up near the scalp.
Come on.
And jerk her head back.
It's bad. Yeah. It's bad. And it's just going to continue to get bad for Susie. Nothing's ever going to be in a good light for Susie. So let you know right up front. In 1976, Susie gave birth to their second son, James, and Dolores didn't get to see him in person until he was a year old. She wasn't allowed to see him as a baby.
What an awful person.
At all. After a couple of years living in South Carolina, Susie and Tom moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Tom wanted to move out there and start his own dental practice. Why he necessarily picked New Mexico, I don't know. Other than to put a lot of distance between his family and her.
Right, right.
I mean, that's a lot of miles.
He just needs miles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom was excited to be there. He was telling Susie how great it was going to be. He buys an office. He's starting his practice. Susie didn't give a fuck about New Mexico.
No.
She didn't like New Mexico mm-hmm. at all. It was nothing like where she grew up. Because North Carolina and New Mexico is two totally different places.
Totally different, yes.
And nobody knew who she was.
Right. You were
not important
here.
They didn't know her name.
Yeah.
They didn't give a fuck who she was.
Right.
You could say your name all you wanted to. You still just the average Joe. And so she was so used to people knowing her and her family, she'd brag about it a lot. So immediately people thought, this is a damn arrogant, braggy bitch.
Yeah, they just went around and be like, nobody gives a shit.
And they didn't. Yeah. You're in New Mexico now. Nobody gives a shit about your family in North Carolina.
Right.
They don't. Susie became angry and their marriage suffered. I mean, come on. Susie also thought that her husband was having an affair with his young dental assistant.
I bet he was.
Which I'm not going to lie, it's known to happen in the dental community. It is known to happen.
I just think of that movie Horrible Bosses and Jennifer Aniston is the dentist. Yes.
I've never seen anything that bad, but thank God the dentist I worked for so many years was wonderful.
Yes.
I wasn't exposed to a lot of that. So this is when it was believed that Susie started to hurt her children. Okay. Now, there was a few incidences where the boys had bruises, cuts. One time, James was hospitalized with a concussion.
Oh, no.
Now, Susie blamed it on the boys being boys, playing too rough and beating up on each other, mm-hmm. which, I mean, kids are definitely going to do.
Right, right.
I haven't known a toddler to land a punch that's going to cause a concussion.
True.
But, you know.
Not saying it can't happen.
However, there was one incident where Susie told a neighbor that she had slapped John so hard, the oldest one, that it knocked him across the room. Mm. But that's hearsay.
Right.
Did that happen? Did it not?
Probably.
There is no doctor visits, no police reports. There's no official
There's no tangible evidence
that it ever happened.
But the fact that she is a
cunt, it was questioned,
makes it probably true.
I mean, if you're even questioned of abuse because of markings or concussions,
right?
It's going
to
raise some
flags. And that shit seems to happen around you, then.
Right.
Yeah.
So for Christmas of 1979, Susie flew herself and her two boys home to North Carolina for the holidays. However, Susie already knew, but Tom didn't. Her and them kids were never coming back. She let him know quick, like, we never, ever fucking
right
coming back to New Mexico. And after a few months, Tom finally accepted that they weren't coming back. So he ended up filing for divorce, which was probably not the best idea on his part. And you'll find out why.
Okay.
Anyway, we'll talk about that later. He knew Susie wasn't coming back, so he was like, fuck this. The shit between her and my mom, my family, nothing's ever going to get better.
Right. Just lessen the
load. Let it go.
Yeah.
Let's let
absolutely.
It go.
I need some peace.
Tom desperately wanted to see his children, however, and Susie being back home with all her family's legal connections fucked him right in his ass.
Right.
So that's why I wonder, what if he didn't file for divorce? What if, even if they were just estranged?
Right.
I mean, I know a lot of this would have still taken place.
Right.
But I just wonder if it would have changed the outcome some. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
You'll never know.
Never know. So with all these legal connections, she easily was given full custody of those children.
Sure. Absolutely.
And not just full custody. I'll go into it here in a minute. She was getting got a lot of shit.
Oh, yeah. She went back to where she had resources, plentiful and resources. And used
them motherfuckers to her advantage. Yeah. 100%. She sucker punched him. He begged Susie to at least give him shared custody, and she said, fuck no. Tom was only allowed to see his children 2 weeks in the summer and every other Christmas.
Oh, my gosh. That's horrible.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
He was also required to pay Susie child support, alimony, and pay her tuition for school should she choose to go back. Mm. I mean, they like fucked him over.
They really did. Yeah.
And I think she was happy to do it.
Susie was just spinning her little web.
Right? Like, she's happy to fucking do it.
Sprinkling in all that bullshit.
Well, once Susie got settled back in North Carolina with the boys, she figured out that she wasn't necessarily as happy as she thought she would be. While she was still back in college at Wake Forest, she had studied some Mandarin and decided that she needed to become fluent in Mandarin in order to have a successful career.
Okay.
I don't know what kind of career.
I was just about to ask.
You need that requires a fluent Mandarin.
In, you know, back in the day in North Carolina.
I have no idea. Okay. But this encouraged her to apply for a English teacher in Taiwan.
Okay. Now, if you want to travel, then I could see.
So she flies to Taiwan, accepts this position in Taipei.
In TP.
What'd you say? Taipei. Susie and her two boys packed up and flew, moved to Taiwan. Typical Susie fashion, just on a whim. She was gone. Mm. Almost didn't even tell her family. Just was up and gone. But quickly realized maybe living in Taiwan ain't the answer either.
Yeah. Maybe I jump before looking.
She and the boys actually both got all sick. I said both got. She and both boys all got sick.
You had all the words there.
Yeah. I just didn't have them in the right order.
Right.
Because there's an adjustment from America to Taiwan.
Sure. I mean, that's a huge difference between North Carolina and Taiwan. Yeah.
They fall ill. She had to quit teaching her classes because she was so sick. Because she quit teaching her classes, she lost her apartment. So after she loses her apartment, she's like, fuck this noise. Packs up the boys, they go back to North Carolina.
Yeah.
Taiwan just ain't going to work out. Yes, that's apparently not going to happen. When she arrived home, some of her friends and family were like, holy shit, you look sick, by how skinny she was and how sickly she looked, and the boys. So the first thing her mom did was make an appointment with her uncle, Dr. Frederick Klinner, the mega vitamin. That's her uncle.
Right.
They want to get her checked out.
Yeah.
What the hell's going on? Susie gets her appointment and her mood changes immediately because she lays eyes on her first cousin, Fritz. Mm. It has been years since Susie had last saw him.
Right.
Because she'd been in South Carolina. She'd been in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
She'd been in Taiwan. She's been doing things.
Yeah.
She could barely fucking believe what she was seeing, because she thought he was the most handsome man she'd ever seen in her life.
Wow.
He was tall. He was dark. He was handsome. And he was in school to be a doctor. So Susie was
He was checking all the boxes.
This is the man I want to be with.
Except for one small fact. They're first cousins.
Yeah. Well, cousin lovers don't really care when they're first cousins. Fritz was in medical school at Duke University, and he was working like his summer clinicals at his dad's practice.
Right.
And she just happened to come in during the summer. They see each other, and they're like, holy shit.
Mm. He looks at her sickly ass and was like, oh, man.
My cousin. Who can imagine how all those details come together?
I can have lots of imagination about that.
I'm going to give you a few details.
They're all horrible.
Well, before we get into those details, let's just go on and take another little sip of that moonshine.
Let's do that.
So I'm about to flip the tables here and tell you exactly who little Fritzy Fritz is.
I feel like Fritz is going to be a freak.
He's got
some proclivities.
He does.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah.
Fill your cups up all the way to the top. Cheers, bitches. I swear to God, I just breathed fire when he came back.
I almost,
there was some light that just came out of my mouth.
I feel like we need a priest to just bless this.
It's definitely some unholy water over here. Oh, okay. So let me tell you the actual truth about Fritz. The dark truth.
Tell me all the juicy tidbits.
You hit the nail right on the head when you said he's weird as fuck, because he had a lot of weird tendencies. Even his family thought he was weird. I mean,
look. We all got that family meal. Like, look, they ain't never been right. I don't know.
He had a fascination with guns and weapons, and he would often head out into the woods and be gone for long periods of time, and nobody knew where he was or what the fuck he was doing. Just and when I say long periods of time, I'm not talking about a hunter that goes in the woods for 3, 4, even 8 hours. I'm talking, he was gone for days. He come back dirty.
He was mountain man in that shit.
Survival of the fittest type of shit.
With all kinds of weapons.
Just because he wanted to.
Yeah. He wanted to feel that freedom. Be one with
nature. I'll never understand that.
You would die in a scenario like that.
I'm a glamping kind of girl. Now, I love camping in my camper. But with my heat and air and my dogs.
If a bug bites you.
Yeah, see, I'm going to, right.
It's just you're not made for that type of situation.
He also admired Hitler.
Oh,
that says a lot.
That's horrible.
Horrible.
Yeah.
So he even had like pictures and posters and stuff. But yeah.
No.
He was a prepper. So he had, like you said, a stock of weapons, stock of ammunition, food, and necessities for the end of the world as we know it.
Or the zombie apocalypse.
He wanted to be prepared.
Whichever.
He frequently told people that he worked undercover with the CIA, that he had served in Vietnam, and none of this bullshit was true.
Right.
But these are just things that he liked to tell people.
Yeah.
Fritz had attended the University of Mississippi and told his family he graduated and was now enrolled in medical school at Duke, which none of was true.
What?
When his father said, well, where's your degree from Mississippi? He came up with a story about some people that he didn't like from school kept him from graduating. And he's like, but I'm going to work it out. I'm going to work it out. He began lying constantly. He told his family that he finally graduated from Mississippi and that he was accepted to Duke. He even went as far as to have his parents rent him an apartment on campus. And he would come home on the weekends with stories about his classes that he had been to during the week. Which none of was true.
Oh, my gosh.
None of. He never graduated from Mississippi. He never even enrolled at Duke.
So him working in his father's office.
Medical practice. And there's lots more to come about that.
Was bullshit.
Oh, there's more to come about that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. That's why I felt like I really needed to give you like a thorough background on some of these people. Fritz and Susie's background of their families, so you know the kind of people we're talking about.
Right.
He was lying to everybody. I mean, the motherfucker was lying to himself. He was literally pretending to be a doctor.
That's crazy.
He had also been married to a woman named Ruth, but in the end, she found out that he was lying about everything and that he was having an affair, so she left him.
Good for her.
Well,
yep. It's the highest proof we've ever done.
Ever. All right. Spending time with Fritz reignited the close bond that Susie and Fritz had as children. You know, once she saw him, once he saw her, they immediately decided they
their
wanted to reconnect.
Just combined.
Drew them to each other.
Yes.
The universe
like a magnet
had brought them together. So they immediately start spending a lot of time together. He would help her around the house, and he was standing in as a good father figure for the boys. At least that's what she
said. In air quotes, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't take long of him hanging around, and Susie decided that what she had was more than a little crush.
Oh.
Like, this is not just a, oh, he's cute. That this was a, I want to ride his face, like in a real way.
forever. He's my soulmate.
Yeah. So there was some shit going on.
Gotcha.
She said, quote, he is a drop dead sexy first cousin.
Oh, no. That should never be in a sentence.
The reason
together.
It bothers me so bad is because, you know, his mom and her mom have to be so similar. DNA, like bloodline. So it just makes me think they're really close. Like just one step away from being brother and sister.
And yeah, basically.
We ain't living in no Targaryen times, people. Mm-mm. You got to spread that shit out. Ooh. We know what happens when you inbreed. And it does not ever come out good, ever.
Don't do that to them youngins.
Ever. Susie started wondering that, I wonder if he feels the same way. Like, is it possible that he's over here doing all this stuff for me because he feels the same way as I do? So she starts studying like his every look, move, gesture. And she said, you know what? Fuck yeah, he feels the same way. Mm-mm. Susie and Fritz kept flirting and nobody knows the exact details, but they flirted long enough that one of them finally gave in. Mm. Now, we don't know who it was first, but we know that it ignited a sexual lust fest. Real fast. Real strong and real fast. Mm. Fritz made Susie feel like she was the most important thing on the earth. And that was more important to her than societal norms. She said, I don't care if you don't think I should be with my cousin.
Right.
Loves me and I'm the most important person in his world.
She was raised to believe that she was. So
a princess queen. Yeah.
Right.
She knew her family would not be tolerant.
Right.
Of the cousin loving.
Yeah.
Cousin loving is not going to be frowned upon.
I feel pretty comfortable saying that most families would probably feel that way.
Yeah, that'd be frowned upon. Because, I mean, by now it's 1983. Susie is 34.
Yeah.
Fritz is 28.
Right.
All you motherfuckers know better.
All of you.
If y'all been at every Christmas together since she was born, mm-mm. Every Easter finding the same Easter eggs. Yeah. Every wedding, every Christmas, every bar mitzvah, whatever the fuck your family is doing.
Right.
If your first cousin's always there.
Yeah.
That's an issue.
Yeah.
Let's think about it. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Don't sleep with your family.
Yeah. Don't sleep with your family.
There's enough people out there. You just don't.
I mean, there really is. There's plenty of people. I was speechless after you said that because my brain was turning, yes, thinking about sleeping, yeah, with my own family, and it's fucking impossible.
I mean, you can pretend you're a human baby and there's somebody for you. You can dress up like an animal.
People
and then
identify
there's somebody
as cats.
Yes, that's dressed up like an animal that wants to bang you as an animal. Like, your person is out there.
It's not your cousin.
Don't lose hope. It's not a family member.
Or your brother or sister.
None of that.
Well, they was loving each other so much that they didn't give a fuck about the consequences. They decided that what they had was special and they were never going to give it up. Mm. They don't give a fuck if it devastates, humiliates their family. They don't care. Mm. They are soulmates.
Twin flames. That's it. It's over.
Well, meanwhile, in 1983, same year, Tom, who was still in Albuquerque at the dental office, gets married to Kathy Anderson. Susie is riding her first cousin's dick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
On a daily.
Mm-mm.
But Tom just wanted to see his kids.
Right.
And Susie was so mad that he got remarried that she cut off all contact.
She just sounds like a hateful, horrible bitch.
Horrible. So at this point, Tom hadn't seen his kids in 2 years. And he had to go to the court to get anything started because she just completely cut off contact with him.
Right.
He begged and begged the judge to allow him to come and get them. The judge did allow this, but required Tom to pay a $10,000 bond to ensure that he would bring the children back. Have you ever fucking heard of such?
No, I was just about to say, is that something I've never heard of that done?
Like, never heard of that.
So, but they're like, Susie's, okay, give us $10,000 and then when you bring it back, does he get that
he
back?
He got it back.
Okay.
As long as he brought the children back safe, he got his money back. So they're like, held his fucking money as ransom for
that
him to see his own children.
Crazy.
For him own children. When he came back to North Carolina to get the children, he spent 5 days with them here and then took them back to New Mexico for a long weekend.
Mm-hmm.
When he sent them back, he had to pay for Susie to fly to Atlanta to meet the boys because their judge ruled they could not change planes alone.
Wow.
I mean, Tom got fucked every way possible.
Gosh, he did.
I mean, I guess he could have flew the kids home himself, but I don't know if work came into it. You know, he'd spend a week with the kids. Right. So
maybe there wasn't a direct flight or whatever.
Who knows? So he paid for the kids to fly home, but then had to buy her a ticket to meet in Atlanta because the planes were changing planes at the airport. Obviously, he's unhappy with this arrangement.
Right.
But at this point, he's thinking, okay, I'm going to fight for more time with him, with the kids. Let things get calmed down a little bit. They just come off this tumultuous trip.
Right.
You know, it was hard enough on the boys. Well, a couple months later, the boys were slated to arrive in Albuquerque for their regular summer visit.
Right.
For their regular 2-week visit. When Jim and John arrived in New Mexico, Tom and Kathy were absolutely horrified at their condition. They were thin and they were sickly looking. Their teeth had not been brushed. Their toenails were curling because it had been so long since they'd been cut.
Oh, no.
They also both had large bags of vitamins and insisted that their mother said they had to take them no matter what.
Mm-mm.
Because she owned that vitamin train.
I'm like, I'll make sure y'all get it. You just hand those here.
And Tom eventually convinced them, you know, well, you let me hold them. I'll take care of them for you. Right. And he threw them out.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to make them take freaking bottle fulls of vitamins every day.
Right.
At first, the boys were super shy, didn't speak a whole lot. Tom believed that Susie had told them not to talk to him about anything that was going on at home.
Sure, I'm sure she did.
I'm sure she did as well.
I have no doubt about that.
Tom worked very hard and got the boys to open up a little bit. After a while, they started to seem like normal kids again.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to see their grandmother Dolores, his mother, who they'd not seen since they were babies.
Oh, yeah.
Since they were babies. And they had never been allowed to speak on the phone with her. Susie would never let her speak to them.
That's so horrible.
It is. To use your fucking children like that.
Yeah.
That's sick. That is sick. Those kids have nothing to do with the bullshit. You and your dress and your sister-in-law and mother-in-law's fight.
Right.
Anyway. While in New Mexico, the boys would bring up their Uncle Fritz a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom hadn't heard anything about what was going on in North Carolina. He had no connections.
Right.
So the children told him that Uncle Fritz was living with them and would take them out camping and hunting a lot. Tom had no idea that the children were made to call him Papa.
Mm-mm.
And Tom, at that point, didn't know that Uncle Fritz and Susie were having an affair.
Right.
Because who would think?
No, yeah, I wouldn't either.
That you're fucking your first cousin.
Right.
So after that summer visit, the boys were sent back to North Carolina per the court order without Tom knowing the extent of the full dysfunction they were being sent back to.
Right.
Well, this visit, for whatever reason, stirred Fritz up. He did not like the boys going to see Tom this time. I guess because it was back to back from his other visit.
And he's losing control. That's just less control he'd have over the boys.
So Fritz had his sights set on Tom now. He was telling people, including Susie, that Tom had only moved to New Mexico because he was a drug smuggler.
Oh, my God.
He claimed that he knew this classified information because of his connections and his CIA undercover work. Susie believed every fucking word he said. Like, I don't know how. I don't know how, but she did.
I mean, she must have been so infatuated.
She got some shit. Yeah. She got some shit of her own. She got some issues of her own
she needed to have
dealt with. She believed every fucking thing he said, and that made her more paranoid and more convinced that Tom was going to try to take the kids from her and she would never see him again.
Mm.
And they had their fucking minds made up that this poor man who gets to see his kids, what, four weeks total a whole damn year?
Yeah.
If that, is going to take the kids and you're never going to see them again.
Right.
Fritz fed Susie lie after lie, worked to completely turn her against Tom. He told her that he knew Tom was going to somehow kidnap those boys and take them to Mexico. And because of this, Susie started cutting Tom off again, all contact with the boys. Mm. But when she would let the boys talk to Tom, Fritz would record their conversations.
Oh my gosh. Crazy.
So you try and talk to your daddy, and your mama sitting there, and your crazy ass uncle sitting there who's fucking each other, and they recording your conversation. Yeah. You just looking at him like, daddy asking me if I cut my toenails. Like, what the fuck, like, y'all?
Why are you here?
Right. Susie even went as far as to tell the boys that some cookies their grandmother had sent them mm-hmm. were poisoned.
Oh my God.
And she threw the cookies out. And she was trying her best to start the process of turning those kids against everybody. Everybody.
Yeah, so they wouldn't ever want to go back out there. Right. That's horrible.
Fritz spent most of his time in gun shops, and it was there that he met Doug. He and Doug spent a good bit of time together. But after a while, Doug began to avoid Fritz because of his increasingly bizarre behavior. Mm. Fritz liked to talk about cyanide a lot, telling Doug that he had made cyanide bullets and kept a list of people he hated. Those are typically the types of people you want to avoid.
100%.
I get it, Doug. I get it.
Yes.
On this list were minorities, women, and Susie's parents.
Oh, wow.
Like, he told Doug who was on his list.
Like, think about this. In all the different ranges of types of friends that we have, I've never had a conversation where we just talked about their murder list, like that they wanted to kill.
Yeah, and that we were making or cyanide bullets.
Cyanide or, yeah, yeah.
Any of that.
I've never had somebody say, I'm going to go kill whoever.
No. And if I did, I would report you immediately, just so you know.
You'd be like, listen, I'm trying to stop before it happens.
Basically, anybody who badmouthed him or his father would end up on his list of enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Doug had another friend, Birch, from the gun shop. They talked about Fritz and how odd he was, and they decided to look into his background because they thought his stories were just suspicious. I mean, he's feeding them the same CIA bullshit, Vietnam bullshit,
right.
Doctor school bullshit, everything.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, we think you're fucking full of shit. They find out that Fritz had no medical license and that he, in fact, had never gone to medical school. Birch reported Fritz to the police, who effectively did nothing.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, if daddy is well known and good friends with the local popo,
they did nothing. And since the police didn't do anything, he's like, well, I'm going to call Fritz's parents. Like, they need to know he has lied about going to medical school.
Right.
So Birch contacts Fritz's mother and father, who also didn't seem concerned at all.
What? Even the least bit shocked or...
Well, remember back when Fritz was married to Ruth?
Right.
And Ruth found out that he was a fraud, he was lying.
Right.
Well, how about Ruth sat down and told Dr. Klinner? And she thought Fritz needed help and that Dr. Klinner would see to getting him help.
Yeah.
However, Dr. Klinner warned her, this is a family issue. Stay the fuck out of it.
What?
So it looked like nobody was going to help. And it was just going to be continued to swept under the rug. So we have multiple people at this time who know he's not a doctor, but he's practicing medicine.
I just think of all the malpractice suits that could be brought.
That would happen at this point. Would
right.
Definitely happen. Okay, so Dr. Klinner Sr. Mm-hmm. died when he was 76 years old.
Okay.
Fritz continued to see his patients.
Shut the front door. What?
When the one friend that had called his parents, Birch, when he found out Dr. Klinner died, he warned people that man was everything to Fritz. And he felt like Fritz was going to go over the edge mm-hmm. after losing his father.
Right.
So that we do have that on record that he made a report to warn citizens.
So he's like, listen, first of all, he's not a doctor.
He's
second of
crazy.
All, he is crazy.
Yeah.
And his father's death is going to make him more crazy.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. He knew. He knew. When Dr. Klinner passed, Fritz inherited around $25,000. But within only a year, he only had $1,000 left in his bank. So he went through $24,000 specifically stockpiling weapons, ammunition, food, camping supplies, vitamins, and cyanide. Like, he spent $24,000.
Like, I know that's the 80s, but can you nowadays, imagine? I feel like those purchases would have been tracked, and triggered. They'd have been like, y'all, something's happening
thanks
over here.
Thanks to Fritz Klenner, they track purchases like that. $24,000 in 1 year on weapons, ammunition, food, camping supplies, vitamins, and cyanide.
Right. Yeah.
You have anybody that's buying...
Like, the bank didn't look and say,
he done bought cyanide 18 times this year. That raises
a flag. I wonder if you put that in a memo of check.
All right, so we're going to stop right here and take a shot because things are about to get grisly. Oh. So, trigger warning, murder's around the corner.
So, fill up your cups.
Fill up your cups.
We have 135 proof here.
We're not filling ours up. Ours are halfway filled.
Yes. No, and we're going to sip.
That's probably too much.
This is sipping.
Cheers, bitches.
Yeah.
It never gets.
Mm-mm.
Oh, shit.
It almost dries my mouth out.
Wow. We have barely put a dent in that jar.
No, I know.
You can. And I don't know about me, but. I mean, I don't know about you. I said, I don't know about me. I don't think we should drink this.
And we still got to record part two.
We do, because we haven't announced this yet, but this is a two-parter, bitches.
Oh, we did.
Yeah, this is going to be a two-parter. But I'm going to give you this little dose of murder first. All right. July 24th, 1984. We're going to Louisville, Kentucky. Who lives there? I just said that wrong. Louisville. Louisville.
It does look like Louisville.
That's what it says right here on my paper. Right. But I know it's Louisville. A friend, Susan, stops by Dolores Lynch's house. Now, we know this is Tom's mama.
Right.
She had not been answering the phone for like 2 days, and then she didn't show up for their planned lunch. So Susan's like, something's fucking going on.
Right.
And Susan pulls into the driveway, gets out of the car, starts walking towards the door, looks down, sees a trail of blood coming down the concrete. She follows this blood trail, and it leads to 68-year-old Dolores' body laying right in front of the door. She freaks out like anybody would. Yeah. Panics, calls the police. Once the police arrive, they see Dolores laying on the ground in front of the door and determine she'd been shot twice. Once in the back of the head and once in the back, like between her shoulder blades. It looked like the killer had used a high-powered rifle because, first of all, there were no shell casings.
Okay.
None.
Right.
So you know what in close proximity,
right,
was somewhere far off, and they determined from the angles and the locations of the shots that they came from a distance.
Right,
this was not close range by any means. They determined that somebody had been waiting and watching in the woods with a sniper rifle.
Oh, that's so scary.
So Dolores gets home from church, like any given day, gets out of the car, walks to the door, has the keys in her hand, and is physically unlocking the door and is popped twice with a sniper rifle.
Oh my gosh.
From who knows how far away. Detectives, you know, go in the house, see if they can figure out what's going on, and quickly realize Dolores is not the only murder victim at the scene. Inside the house, they find a second dead body. This victim was Dolores' daughter, Tom's sister, Janie. She had also been shot in the back of the head and in between the shoulder blades in the back.
Oh, my God.
From the state of the bodies, the police believe the murder occurred 2 days prior, which makes sense. They knew she was in her Sunday clothes. It was obvious she was getting home from church.
Right.
They pieced two and two together. Inside the house, the police find jewelry dumped out, dresser drawers dumped out, which would imply that they had been maybe murdered during a botched burglary.
Right.
But the scene just looks suspect as fuck.
Right. Like, staged.
Police are familiar with what a normal ransacked house looks like.
Yeah.
Okay. And this did not look like a normal one at all. It looked like it had been staged to look like a robbery, mm-hmm. but in fact, nothing had been taken. So,
yeah. Staged.
Yes.
All day long.
However, inside the house, once they made it in and found the second body of Janie, they found a shell casing. A 223 military assault rifle, which proved even further that this was an assassination, not a fucking robbery. You know, detectives know what kind of scene when they get there, if they've seen it before.
Right, and if there's nothing taken either.
And they said this looked like a professional hit. Mm. This was pop, 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 done.
Yeah.
But obviously, they fucked up the house. I mean, there was some other shit going on. But now they had to determine who's going to want to assassinate these two women. You know, who in the world is going to kill this grandmother? And Janie, she's 40-some years old.
Right. What purpose?
Yeah. And I saw some of the crime scene photos.
Mm-hmm.
Dolores, you know, like I said, she had her Sunday dress on and stuff, and she was laying on the ground. Janie had curlers in her hair. Like, she was just at home doing her normal
routine.
Shit.
Yeah.
She had on shorts and a t-shirt, curlers in her hair. I don't think she ever fucking saw it coming, ever.
Yeah.
And from the way her body was laying, too, I think she just, bam, just fell.
Yeah.
You know, it was from the back. She had no idea what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
And she was also in the hallway, which leads me to believe he shot Dolores first,
mm-hmm.
and Dolores had the house unlocked because she was putting the key in the door anyway.
Right.
So he gained access, and he got in and shot her when she's just in there milling about and had no idea any of this shit had even happened or taken place, you know. After doing some research, detectives find out since Dolores is dead and now Janie's dead, Tom Lynch is next in line to collect from the estate.
Right.
So they think that's their first lead. I mean, you got to start from the ground
up.
Absolutely.
I think they all look at immediate family.
And look at everything available in front of them. And by this point, with Janie being deceased, he's the sole beneficiary because there are no other siblings.
Right.
Detectives contact Tom, who's still living in Albuquerque, still at his dentist's office,
mm-hmm.
and they ask him to fly to Kentucky for an interview. And when Tom was interviewed by detectives, he genuinely seemed devastated.
Yeah.
I mean, his dad had passed several years earlier, so it was just his mom and his sister, and now they had been wiped out.
Yeah, to know that your entire family is gone.
Yeah. I mean, he was genuinely upset. During the time of the murders, Tom and his new wife were on a fishing trip with the two boys. This happened during their summer trip when he had the boys with him.
Right.
So he was pretty quickly, now I'm not going to say ruled out, but they knew he had a solid alibi. Let's put it that way. Like,
states away on a fishing trip.
With your kids, there is time, state, damp. What's the dinner? There is time stamped, dated proof.
Right.
Of where he was and what he was doing. So, you know, his alibi is solid as fuck. No way he could have been in the state of Kentucky at the actual time of the murders. But that didn't mean he didn't hire somebody to kill him.
True.
Detectives find out that Tom and Susie had a nasty divorce. And they find this because Dolores, Tom's mama, had their divorce papers at her house.
So when they're
investigating the scene, they're like, why does she have her son's divorce papers out readily? Like, obviously they were just looking at them.
Yeah.
Available. That seems suspect as fuck. And then they realize how screwed over Tom got. Like, he had to pay alimony. He had to do this. He had to pay her fucking plane tickets, her schooling, anything and everything she wanted. And they realize, how much money does Tom have? So they start looking into his finances. He broke.
Yeah. I mean, if you got to pay her all that.
Right.
Sure.
So now they're like, did he hire somebody to kill his mama and his sister.
Right.
So that he can get that payout, right, so that he can get back on his feet.
They got to work every angle.
Exactly. Tom insisted he had nothing to do with the murders. And he could tell the detectives were suspicious of him. So he's like, look, I'll take a polygraph right now. Right. As many as you want, whatever you want. Yeah. And they did. They immediately put him on the polygraph. And he answered every question 100% truthfully.
Right.
Truthfully. Detectives also learned there was this bad animosity between Dolores and Susie.
Yeah.
And so maybe that shifts their focus. Okay, if Tom's not the suspect for these divorce papers being out,
right,
is Susie the suspect? This led them to wonder, you know, does she have a role to play in the murders? Detectives asked Tom, okay, could Susie be involved? Tom tells them that he truly believes Susie is not capable of killing. So the Kentucky detectives that are interviewing Tom, mm-hmm, call the police in Forsyth County, where she's living in Greensboro.
Right.
And the police there agree with Tom. They knew her. They knew her family. Mm-hmm. They knew their legal connections. They knew all of that. And they, right, said, she's not a suspect. She is an outstanding citizen from a well-respected family.
Right. Little did they know, she's fucking her cousin.
Right. Well, with Tom and Susie both removed from the suspect list, detectives were unsure where to turn. I mean, they don't have any leads. And a whole year goes by. It turns into a cold case.
Right.
Until one day, we get our new lead.
Dun, dun, dun.
And on that, we're going to wrap up our episode for today.
What? You're gonna leave me hanging.
Sorry to do it for you, but I gotta get you coming back for more.
Well, I can't wait to hear the
See, it's not just me. It's not just me.
I can't wait to hear the rest of it.
Yeah, we're gonna fill these cups up one more time.
Let's do that, because not who really needs to talk, right?
Not really fill it up though.
Just we'll fill it a little bit.
Just a little bit. Cheers, bitches. Oh, God.
Oh, it takes a little time to recover
from. It does.
That one.
I hope you guys have enjoyed part one. Part two is going to be twice as juicy. I know there's a lot of background. I had to go over the family tree.
Right.
To get you where we are, where we need to be.
Yeah, some stories you do need that in order to tell the story right.
It's worth coming back for.
Well, you know I'm here for it, so. Well, on that note, then, be good, stay out of trouble, or don't get caught.
Bye, bitches.
We hope you keep listening and find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok at Murder and Moonshine.
We would love to hear from you. You can send us an email at murderandmoonshine@gmail.com.